A story now for Halloween. A story written by many hands. It's sort of like a chain letter. The links of the chain are some of our commentators, friends of the program who usually work alone. This time, we asked them to collaborate on a scary story, each one picking up the tale where the previous writer had stopped. We present now our story called A Halloween Journey, read by the authors. Alan Chuse begins the story.
Halloween can be a dangerous time to travel if you're on your own. I learned this several long years ago, having just hopped onto a train late one chill and stormy Halloween evening for a brief but important journey through the deserted middle part of our country. After taking a seat near the rear of what I at first believed to be an otherwise unoccupied car, I removed a book from my bag, a novel by a purple-prosed horror writer much given to using capital letters and a lot of exclamation points, and I was just about to settle in with the hope of finding some sort of dreamy escape from the ills of real life when the conductor padded down the aisle so quietly that he was almost upon me before I saw him. "Tickets, please," he said in a rather ragged voice, barely raised above a whisper. I was shocked to see that in addition to the usual blue uniform and dark conductor's cap, he was wearing a black cat mask that sported long dark whiskers on either side of his neatly sculpted feline nose. He took my ticket in his thick fingered paw, paused a moment, and said, "And who are you supposed to be?"
But I was not in the mood for Halloween antics. "Just a traveler," I said wearily.
Part 2 by Bailey White.
He punched my ticket with 3 quick snaps and said, "Enjoy the ride." As he sashayed down the aisle, I saw that he had a lumpy tail attached to the seat of his pants with a big silver safety pin. "And who are you supposed to be?" the conductor had asked. "In fact, I am the sales representative for the most respected chicken hatchery in the Midwest. But just this morning, my wife had stood on the porch in her pink furry slippers and shouted at me, 'You're nothing but a goddamn chicken salesman.' We sell rare and exotic chickens, and we are recognized by the ALBC for preserving vanishing livestock breeds. But my wife says, 'A chicken's a chicken.' And then she goes into her chicken imitation, growling, 'Burk, burk, burk,' with her little pointy elbows flapping up and down. I looked out at the stormy night, the dry stalks and abandoned cornfields lashed by rain. 'Who are you supposed to be?' I thought. And then I saw the face, or a reflection of a face, beside my own in the window. And I whirled around and looked across the aisle, up and down the rows of empty seats.
I turned my head back and felt something like wool brush my temple when 2 big brown eyes and a pair of lips like swollen blackberries jumped from the seat across the aisle and into my face.
Part 3 by Leon Winter.
They smiled at first, then made a juicy pout. "Watch out for the conductor. I want to show you something. Okay?" She motioned me to scoot next to her as she slid to the edge of the window seat, which was carefully piled with 12 covered boxes of curious shapes and sizes. She reached inside one lined with aluminum foil and began groping for something. "He watching me, I know. But I can't make it all the way back north without going to the bathroom. Will you watch them for me?" I thought about getting busted babysitting drugs and what they do to chicken salesmen in prison. But before I could answer, she shoved my right hand in the box with hers. Something slithered over my knuckles. The pout melted into another smile. I got 2 snakes, 4 turtles, a little lizard, and a baby alligator up in here. She stood up with a shimmy into the aisle on Tina Turner legs protruding from the wicked little skirt. "What am I supposed to do if..." "Don't worry, baby. If my snake starts to shake, just stroke him till he's asleep," she said, disappearing down the aisle. Then I felt a long splinter enter my thumb. I try to speak to new passengers, but they can't hear me. Some of them have beaks. Right before the lights went out, the long train shuddered from the head of its twin black locomotives to the orange glowing lanterns on its tail.
Suddenly, the train jerked back into motion, and the conductor swung up from the platform and waddled down the aisle.
Part 4 by Laurie Anderson.
Hey, you. Conductor, I called out as he brushed past. Sit down. Not really supposed to sit down on the job, he said, but hey, I'll tell you, it's a pretty slow night. There was silence for a while as the train rumbled along. What's your line of work, he said, eyeing the packages that were now moving around on the seat. Salesman, I said. Chicken salesman. One of the boxes started to shake, and the head of a snake shot out of the top of one of them. I clapped the head back in, but the conductor, or cat, or whatever he was, didn't seem to notice. What outfit you with, he said, fiddling with the safety pin on his tail. You probably haven't heard of it, I said, but let me put it this way. We've been recognized by the ALBC for our expertise in preserving vanishing livestock breeds. Now, when I say vanishing, I don't mean endangered species. What I mean here by vanishing is poof, as in gone, as in now you see them, now you don't. That's the kind of thing we do. Ever seen a chicken vanish? Suddenly, all the passengers with beaks twisted their heads out into the aisle, clacking and shrieking. When I looked back, the conductor was gone, but the cat suit was still sitting there, empty.
Part 5 by Andre Codrescu.
When Tina Turner returned from the bathroom, she gasped. She stood there with a hand on her hip, surveying her snakes loose on the floor, her rare turtles moving toward the door, the stiff bodysuit of the cat on the seat next to me. An expression of both horror and disgust played on her handsome face, and then she did something as unexpected as it was chilling. She spoke a single word in German. Raus! A nickel-plated revolver in her gloved hand pointed at me. I looked out the window at the oblique sheets of rain illuminated by occasional lightning. The floor swarmed with reptiles. Tina barred the door. Out? Where? And why? Why would such things happen in one day to a humble chicken salesman? I had no choice. I opened the train window, and, leaving behind my paperback, Tina Turner and her menagerie, and the whole story of my life so far, I bailed out into the night.
Part 6 by Bill Harley.
I hit the ground, my legs and arms flailing. Down the embankment of cinder and gravel I rolled until scrub oak and sumac stopped my fall. I lay staring up at the night sky, listening to the train roll away. As my breath slowed and my heart stopped its pounding, I could hear the unmistakable wheezing of an accordion. I hobbled through the brush, following the sound of a polka towards the faint glow of firelight.
I found myself in a daze in a rustic farmyard. A rustic farm yid was sitting on the stoop, whittling a Confederate flag out of a shtick possum.
Part 7 by Daniel Pinkwater.
Come here, Yankee, the old man said to me. I'm gonna show you Nadine. She's all I've got. Not knowing why, I followed the Alta Cracker into his dingy cocholane. He unlocked the door to the basement, and full of trepidation, I followed him down the rickety stairs. The only light was a dim glow from the messy kitchen behind us. The zany Zeta pulled a chain, and a naked 25-watt bulb created a puddle of illumination, in the middle of which I saw a chicken the size of a horse, fastened to a ring bolt in the floor by means of a stout chain. Nadine, the old Yold exclaimed, she's a starker, isn't she?
¶¶
Nadine clucked menacingly.
Part 8 by Joyce Maynard.
I've seen a lot of chickens in my day, but none to compare with the bird that stood before me now, flapping her great bony wings. Her feathers had a greasy texture, and she sported slippers identical to the ones I'd given Doreen, my wife, on our last anniversary. Staring into her hard, beady eyes, black as an oil slick, I knew I'd seen that look somewhere before. Then it hit me. She was a dead ringer for Frank Perdue. I'd been dimly aware of a faint but growing noise in the room, like an army of rat's feet skittering over marble tile, or a teeming mass of maggots feeding on a cadaver. The dank basement was filled with eggs, all shaking and crackling as 1,000 oversized beaks pecked their way out. Within moments, the room had filled with a sickening smell as the oily heads of dozens of oversized chicks emerged from their shells, each with those same greasy feathers. As the last pieces of eggshell fell away, I watched the herd of super chickens lumber out into the room, shaking the very floorboards as their pink-slippered feet moved across the floor to encircle me, cackling and pecking at my pant legs. The mother hen broke free of her chain. She put her wings under my armpits and lifted me up by my neck, with my legs flailing. "Hey, rooster!" she called out to a scrawny old bird who'd been resting on a bale of straw up until now with a television on, tuned, I realized, to a Dallas Cowboys game. "I bet this here's a 200-pounder."
189, actually. The TV camera and hanging upside down add 10 pounds.
Part 9 by Bob Garfield.
Look, I don't know a lot about a lot of things, but I am a man who knows his chickens, and somehow I was able to detach myself from my own fear and calmly analyze what lay before me. The first thing I noticed was the wobbly gait of the one called Rooster. Now, as everyone knows, a strutting chicken is a happy chicken, and one that wobbles is the excitable kind. The second thing was that these were talking chickens. This enabled me to conclude I was dealing not only with giant, violent chickens, but giant, violent chickens with above-average intelligence. But the thing that really got me was smack in the middle of the basement, surrounded by those awful grade quintuple A eggs. Amid molted feathers and four or five pairs of dumbbells, there it stood, ominous and terrible, and not a cobweb on it. A Stairmaster. "Sweet Josephine," I gasped. "Health-conscious chickens." Then I felt myself losing consciousness in the echo of my own shrieks because the truth was too horrible. Before they cooked me, they were going to remove my skin.
Part 10 by Amy Dickinson.
If I ever get out of this, I told myself, I'll start over. No more nameless chicks backed up against the fryolator. No more Tammies in the stockroom. From here on out, it's me and Doreen and our brood scratching out a life together, our crooked smiles fixed, our precious dark hearts beating. Outside, great thunderheads moved across the moon. White-hot welding sparks of lightning arced from the sky to the ground and back again. Thunder rolled across the stars like a runaway train. I tried to force down the hard lump that had formed in my throat. It was time to make my move. I thrust my hands in my pockets, Fred Astaire style. I turned my back and with a low whistle, strolled out of there. Nadine, she did what they all do. Slowly, she followed me out into the storm, ducking and pecking and clucking in a baritone rumble. The clouds started to empty raindrops the size of wiffle balls. And that stupid, giant chicken lifted her ghastly head to the sky, and she started to drink.
"Dumb cluck," I muttered and started to resume my stroll.
Part 11 by Teller.
But I couldn't move. The demon baby chicks had packed themselves around my feet. Suddenly, A fluffy mass hit my chest and I fell backwards into the swamp of warm, stinking feathers and flesh. I looked up. An open beak and a pair of red eyes looked back. The demon baby chick spoke.
And who are you supposed to be? Shut up. We know. We're the ones you sell. But I'll tell you a secret. Whenever your customers snap a wishbone, they send the soul here. And you thought it brought you good luck. Ha ha.
And with that, he pinched my right eyelid with his beak and tore it off and swallowed it.
Delicious. And what's this? A water chestnut?
In a single beakful, he scooped out my right eye.
No, it's meteor. But I like it. It tastes a little like...
Stop it! Get off him!
Part 12 by Marion Winnick.
Oh, my God. You're not supposed to really pluck out his eyes. That's a, what do you call it? A figure of speech.
These were the last words I heard before I lost consciousness. But even as the lights went out, I knew with utter certainty whose voice I was hearing. It was my wife, Doreen. When I came to, I was back in the basement. Though one of my eyes was heavily bandaged and the other swollen shut, the chicken stench and the drone of the Cowboys game in the background were unmistakable. As if things weren't bad enough, Dallas was down by 3. Managing to work open my unbandaged eye, I took stock of the unbelievable scene. My wife had removed the headpiece of her chicken costume. Her hair hung in damp red clumps around her face. She was in a heated argument with another partially costumed woman, whom I recognized as the Tina Turner lookalike from the train. The feline conductor lounged on the couch with Rooster, watching the game. And all around us swarmed the demon chicks, cheeping with bloodlust.
Listen, Tina, said Doreen. You've been in this coven as long as I have, and you're the one that volunteered your husband, so let's get to it. The blood of the chicken salesman must be spilled before the stroke of midnight on Halloween.
Part 13 by Kevin Kling.
Midnight was fast approaching. It was time to act. Suddenly, I flung myself against Tina's body. Her hollow bones cracked under my weight. Rooster was up in a flash, spurs whistling by my head. But on its next pass, I grabbed a scaly leg, pinned him in a double chicken wing, rubbed his tummy, and watched as his eyes rolled up in his head, hypnotized. All right, my friend, I said. Act like a... Hold it right there. It was Doreen. Even as she pointed Tina's snub-nosed 357 at me, I realized I loved her. Loved her with all my heart. Oh, what a woman. If only things were different. If only, no. How many secrets from the plant had I already willingly turned over in the heat of passion? I could not make that same mistake again. I would not play the cuckold. I rushed for the gun, heard a loud, no, and then blam, blam.
Part 14 by Alan Shoes.
Behind me, a body fell with a muffled thud, the noise drowned out by the rising sounds of the celebrating chickens and the Dallas game. The masked conductor, still clenching a chicken flenser in his right hand, lay at my feet, a bullet hole between his masked cat eyes. "Yow," he said, somehow still gasping for air. "I'm FBI agent Katz. I followed you from the train. I thought you might lead me to them. I know who you're supposed to be." "I'll tell you who you are," Doreen said, now much to my horror, pointing her weapon again at the agent in the cat suit and pulling the trigger one more time. "You're a traitor to your species, going to Chicago to sell our breed for wieners." "Our time has come," she said to me. "We're bound now to take over the earth and destroy all of those evil fast food chains." "Hold it right there," I said, holding up my book between us as though it might serve as a shield. "Surely I fell asleep on the train to Chicago on my way to the Chicken Wiener Convention. Around this time, I wake up and find myself still on the train. That's what always happens in these novels." It's not a dream, Doreen said. It's the only evening when creatures such as ourselves can walk the night freely, mingling with human beings who wear their ridiculous costumes. She tossed the weapon onto the body of the man in the catsuit and held her claws out to me. You gay old cock, you. Now you know who you're supposed to be. It was then, feeling uncomfortable for having worn this rooster-like attire all the long journey, that I tossed my useless book aside and tried to remove the feathery shirt across my chest. But nothing came loose. I reached around and touched the back of my head, shocked to find the fleshy ripple of a leathery crest. A few feathers floated in the air, and I stood there, quaking with the realization of the truth, staring wide-eyed at my capon wife as the wall of cackling hens and squeaking chicks rose around me, burying me forever in the feathery cacophony of their triumphant calls.
A Halloween Journey, written and read by Alan Chews, Bailey White, Leon Winter, Laurie Anderson, Andre Cadrescu, Bill Harley, Daniel Pinkwater, Joyce Maynard, Bob Garfield, Amy Dickinson, Teller, Marion Winnick, and Kevin Kling. Music and sound effects by Big Blow and the Bushwhackers.
Our program is produced by Sean Collins, edited by Jonathan Kern, and directed by Bob Boylan.
A Halloween Journey was produced by Art Silverman, engineered by Mark Greenhouse.
Our story on the race in Ohio's 6th Congressional District was produced by Margaret Lowe Smith and engineered by Rich Rary.
Gabriel Ross assisted with both stories.
The executive producer is Ellen Weiss.
I'm Noah Adams.
And I'm Robert Siegel. You're listening to NPR's All Things Considered.
Cluck, cluck.